The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What's going on, everybody? And welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, May 12th. Frank Thamful joined by Scott White. Lots to talk about. Today will be a good test of pacing, which I will admit is not my strong suit. We've got the worryometer for hitters. We haven't talked about buy, sell, and hold on some starting pitchers. Lots of interesting starting pitching performances from Tuesday, as always. I want to talk a little bit more about Jesse Winker. Do we need to boost this guy up a little bit? I think the confidence is growing there, Scotty. And I have an outfielder that I think you should be buying in on. Let's jump right in.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right, Scott. How you doing, bud? How's life? You all right?
It's fine. I don't know if you want me to get into my my health woes here.
No.
Yeah, that would be the kind of like sad story a grandparent would tell to fill the time. We don't need to do that. We got a lot of pitchers to talk about. So
we do indeed. Take it away.
The one I'm going to pick is Madison Bumgarner, who was amazing again against the Marlins this time. And that was what his almost no-hitter was against, too. It was also against the Marlins. But actually, no, that's not true. That was against the Braves. Okay, second straight start against the Marlins for Bumgarner. Second dominant outing. 9 strikeouts, 7 shutout innings, only 4 hits allowed. He's allowed a grand total of 12 hits. Madison Bumgarner has 12 in his past 5 starts. So what a turnaround for this guy who looked hapless and helpless last year and at the beginning of this season. We've seen the velocity go up to, you know, pre-2020 standards over the course of this 5-star run. But what really makes him, oh my goodness gracious, velocity went up again. It was way up. He averaged 92.6 on his fastball against the Marlins. Remember, this is a guy we were excited about him almost reaching 91, and he averaged 92.6 in this. That's like going back to prime Bumgarner before the dirt bike accident. One start, but still, I didn't even think he had it in him anymore. I don't know. I don't see much reason to be concerned about him at this point. It just looks like he's back.
Yeah, 92.6 miles per hour on the fastball. I was gonna do a little quick game log run and see when the last time Mad Bum actually averaged that much on his fastball, but it probably would take a good amount of time. So Scott, I mean, what is your confidence level in Mad Bum to this point? Like, do we need to prop him up inside of our top 60 starting pitchers, our top 50 starting pitchers? Cause it seems like we've been pushing a lot of pitchers into that range recently, but a lot of people are also performing well. Madison Bumgarner is one of them.
Yeah, so I had him right at 60 prior to this start. I was just messing around with my rankings prior to it. And so I feel like I'd move him ahead of Pineda. I'd move him ahead of Zach Eflin. Robbie Ray had another great start today. Dylan Cease, kind of a so-so start, but really like the underlying numbers. We'll get into that, I'm sure. So yeah, there's only so far I can move Bumgarner up. You know what? I might need to drag like Frankie Montas, Nathan Eovaldi, who was you know, he had a quality start today, but I don't really love what I'm seeing in the underlying numbers. I might need to drag those guys down to get Bumgarner up closer to 50. But yeah, it's getting crowded in that 30 to 60 range at starting pitcher. The what I had been referring to for the past few years as the small, very small middle class at the position. It's suddenly becoming robust.
It's just a giant middle class now of
like
pitchers in the past couple of years that have been just decent that are turning themselves into awesome pitchers all of a sudden. But as we spoke about yesterday, that's kind of the way that baseball is trending right now. Last one for you here on Bumgarner, Scott. Bumgarner or Chris Paddock?
Yeah, that's a top. I really don't see any reason. I mean, given that there is this surplus of options we feel pretty confident in, really don't see reason to hold out hope for Paddock. I mean, there are some good signs. He may well be fine, but what would fine look like? Kind of what I expect Bumgarner to be at this point, right? Like, it's not like Paddock, even when he had that great rookie season, it's not like he was striking out 11 per nine, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I probably need to drag him down too.
Yeah, I think I would agree at this point. Bumgarner at least has three pitches that he can go to consistently. Chris Paddock really only has one and a half. He doesn't really use his curveball all that much. Mad Bum on Tuesday used the four-seam, the cutter, and the curveball at each 27% of the time or more. So he's got those three pitches that he can rely on. The last time he averaged 92.6 miles per hour on his fastball in a start was June 9th of 2019. So it has been a while there for Madison Bumgarner. Scott, I'm going to talk about a starting pitcher as well for my oh my goodness gracious player from Tuesday. Shohei Ohtani, man, at the Houston Astros. And this kind of leads back into the discussion of, all right, well, how do we get fantasy points for both the pitcher and the hitter? Because it stinks to see this happen when he's on your bench. Seven innings, one earned run, well, in your utility spot. Seven innings, one run, one walk, 10 strikeouts against the Houston Astros, who have one of the lowest swinging strike rates in all of baseball. 15 swinging strikes for Ohtani on 88 pitches. The guy just looked absolutely unhittable. And speaking of unhittable, he's allowed 11 hits with 40 strikeouts in 25 and two-thirds innings pitch. This is the type of performance that you can get when his control is actually on and he's not walking the entire world. This is Ohtani's first start with one walk since May 20th of 2018, which sounds drastic, but it's actually only been eight starts since that start. So he's dealt with a lot of injuries, but this was far and away the best I've seen Ohtani look as a pitcher, Scott. And I think at least heading into next week where, if what I was looking at is correct, the Angels are scheduled for eight games. So they probably have a doubleheader somewhere in there. I think he's going to have a two-start week. So we're actually going to have to decide, use him as a pitcher or use him as a hitter.
Yeah, and that looked like it was going to be true last week too, but then he had a start pushed back because of a minor issue he was dealing with. But yeah, I mean, only one walk. It was a big turning point because while he was certainly missing a lot of bats prior to this start, 19 walks in 18 and two-thirds innings is what he entered with into this start. So to have only one and against the Astros, that says a lot. That says a lot. Now, 88 pitches in seven innings, that was efficient. The thing is, even though he was getting a lot of strikeouts, a lot of walks in the other starts, he wasn't wasting a lot of pitches. Like his pitch counts were surprisingly low, I would say, considering all those walks and strikeouts. So, like, he's basically been unhittable from the beginning. But you're kind of burying the lead here, Frank, I feel like, for Ohtani's performance, because what might be even a bigger deal than how well he pitched is that when he was removed from the mound, he stayed in the game as the right fielder.
And I didn't even notice. Good catch.
This is actually his second appearance this year in the outfield. So he's three away. I just love that Joe Maddon is like all the rules the Angels laid out for Ohtani previously. He's just breaking them all. He's just breaking them all. We can use him in the field. Why not?
And they should. Based on how he's playing, Scott, they should break the rules for him because
I mean,
he's proving he can do it.
it's a long season and we're like a fifth of the way into it. So it's worth saying that. It may not be able to for all 6 months, but yeah, I mean, right now, enjoy the ride. You know, as to whether or not I'd use him as a two-star pitcher next week or a hitter, in most instances, I'd probably still use him as a hitter. I think in a points league, you might think about using him as a pitcher, or just a league where you happen to be stacked at hitter and short on pitchers. Probably not a lot of those circumstances out there, but maybe.
If anybody out there has a solution for how to get the production for both hitter and pitcher Ohtani as one player, send it in. Email us, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Tweet at me, @Roto_Frank. Well, Scott at CBS.
I got
Scott
a solution White. For you. Just count all his stats, no matter where you start. Start him at either spot.
Yeah.
And just count all the stats.
He would be a bona fide first round pick.
You know, if you say, oh, but I don't want to have to count all the hitting stats for all pitchers, fine. Just count the stats he produces when he's not listed as a pitcher on the lineup card. Or, you know, if universal DH becomes a thing, just start counting all stats for all pitchers, because there won't be that many being put up.
Yep, that was my next point. I was like, starting next year, we probably won't even have to worry about that. So hopefully that's the case, because we've got to figure this out, man. We have to get pitching and hitting stats for Shohei Ohtani. Before we get to the news and notes, just wanted to let you know what's going on CBS Sports HQ this week. As always, CBS Sports HQ is your home to start your sports news day, with live updates kicking off each morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. And HQ is always your home ahead of the evening's action, with live picks from the best analysts and cappers in the sports world each day at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. On Wednesday, NFL experts, today when you're listening to this, will be breaking down this 2021 schedules, and our cappers will be making Preakness picks ahead of Saturday's race. So check out HQ on your computer on CBSSports.com or via the CBS Sports app on your mobile phone or TV. It's always free. It's always on CBS Sports HQ. Some news and notes from Tuesday. Fernando Tatis unfortunately has tested positive for COVID, which means he'll be out at least the next 10 days, maybe a tad longer as he gets himself back into game shape. Jurickson Profar and Jorge Mateo were placed on the IL for contact tracing reasons as well. Corbin Burnes will likely return Thursday this week and start against the Cardinals, according to manager Craig Counsell. Christian Yelich is participating in all baseball activities, which it seems kind of soon, Scott. Honestly, I mean, the guy just came back. He went on the IL, I believe it was last Monday night after he played. It seems kind of soon, so.
I agree.
Ketel Marte ran, hit, and caught fly balls on Tuesday at Chase Field. He said he's hoping to start a rehab assignment Thursday or Friday this week. Nate Pearson was optioned back to AAA. He walked 5 and allowed 3 runs in 2 1/3 innings pitched on Sunday against the Astros. George Springer has been able to swing a bat, but isn't expected to start running until Thursday. Another one, man, like Yelich, just let this guy rest up. We don't want to rush George Springer back. Jeff McNeil left Tuesday's game with body cramps. Chris Bryant left with, quote, sinus stuff. Carlos Martinez was placed on the IL with a right ankle injury. Amir Garrett had his suspension reduced to 5 games, which he started serving on Tuesday. Javier Baez was scratched with lower back tightness, which he's kind of been dealing with off and on for the past couple of weeks or so. So that's another one I feel like the Cubs just give him some time to rest a little bit there. Wilson Ramos could return from the IL when first eligible on Monday. David Price threw a simulated game Tuesday at Dodger Stadium. Tony Gonsolin is scheduled to throw 2 innings against live hitters later this week in Arizona. Brandon Belt left Tuesday's game with mild left side tightness. And I did have a prospect update. I didn't get an opportunity to look at Tuesday box scores yet, but from Monday, Joe Adell hit a pair of home runs at AAA. The worryometer on hitters that we haven't really talked about, and I kind of see a common theme here with at least the first 4 hitters. So you tell me if you see the same theme as well. And we'll try and figure this out together, Scott. But Eddie Rosario went 0-3 on Tuesday. He is now batting .228 with a .645 OPS. He has a couple of home runs. I think he has 3 home runs, but he is running a little bit, which has helped his value. He has 5 steals in the season. What is going on with Eddie Rosario? What is your worryometer on him, Scott?
Okay, so I will try to give player-specific analysis here, because that's what the segment calls for.
Yep.
But just to kind of preface the whole thing, I have no faith in my ability to evaluate hitters in this range right now, kind of that middle tier of hitters, guys who are clearly underachieving so far, and there's a lot of them. I have no idea, because like the landscape appears to have changed so much, and I feel like I need to wait for it to recalibrate to have some idea what I'm talking about in terms of, okay, well, this guy looks like there's nothing wrong with him. He's going to bounce back. You know, I don't know. I don't know how to pick out which of these guys specifically will and which won't. I mean, Eddie Rosario specifically, strikeout rate looks fine. Average exit velocity, fine. I don't see anything in the data that's particularly alarming here. So I would still have as much faith in Eddie Rosario as I ever did, except that I don't have faith in this class of hitter as a whole.
Do you have a worryometer number on him?
Five. Five. Nice. Right. Straight down the middle.
All right. The biggest thing that stands out to me, and as I'll point out with these next three, is I think that these are clearly the hitters that are being affected most by this ball, right? So it's Eddie Perhaps. Rosario, Mike Moustakas, Lourdes Gurriel, Kevin Biggio. Not hitters that potentially that actually hit the ball all that hard. I mean, they all kind of put the ball in the air a decent amount.
Go through those names again.
Eddie Rosario, Mike Moustakas, Lourdes Gurriel, Kevin Biggio.
Because Gurriel does hit the ball really hard.
He has at times in the past. I mean, he's been a little bit inconsistent in his career where he gets off to these slow starts and then he heats up. But
yeah,
you know, in particular for these four, it just seems like they made the most of just putting the ball in the air a decent amount, right? Like volume fly ball hitters, basically. And it seems like they would be the ones affected by this ball, which is clearly not traveling as far as it used to. In particular for Eddie Rosario, his home run to fly ball ratio is 8% this year. The year before, it was 15.9. The year before, 15.8. So kind of sounds like he's just being affected by this new baseball. But we could take a closer look at Mike Moustakas, who is another one. He's always hit the ball a good amount in the air. This year, he's got an 18% infield fly ball rate. Those are automatic outs. So that's definitely something that's contributing to his 218 batting average. So what do you think about Mike Moustakas, Scott? Worryometer.
I mean, Mike Moustakas has been around a long time, right? He's been through some eras. And really, for home runs specifically, judging by the league-wide rate, I feel like the closest, the year to compare it to is 2018, which was during, it was still during the home run explosion. It was the worst year of the home run explosion, but still, like, historically speaking, relative to the decade as a whole, it's still a good time to, a good year for home runs. So, I mean, Moustakas hit 28 home runs in 2018. His worst total of that run. He had a 38 homer season before. He had a 35 homer season in 2019. You know, as we talked about yesterday, BABIP is where you see the most dramatic change. BABIP is historically low. Strikeout rate is historically high too. You expect that, but that when hitters make contact, so few hits are resulting from it. That's really the thing I don't know how to account for. Yeah, Moustakas, I would say of this group, if I'm ranking them from most confident they'll be okay to least confident they'll be okay, Gurriel, I'm most confident will be okay, then Moustakas, then Rosario. Kevin Biggio, kind of a distant last year. I mean, Kevin Biggio was someone you could easily peg to have problems if the effect of the ball changed too much. And I think it was on all our bust lists coming into the season for that reason, in part for that reason, in part because it looked like he overachieved even with the ball as it was.
All right. So if you were trying to buy low on any of these, Gurriel is the one that you feel the most.
Yeah, no, I totally am with Chris as Gurriel. Gurriel is a buy low candidate. You know, we're kind of poking fun earlier, him saying he'd trade Carlos Rodon for Gurriel. To me, that doesn't seem like a buy low trade. But just the idea of trading, of buying low on Gurriel, I think makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And Gurriel is another one where his home run to fly ball ratio so far this season is 6%. Last year it was 20%. The year before it was 20%. So another one where you're seeing those fly balls just not going out of the yard. For Kevin Biggio, actually, his home run to fly ball ratio is right in line with where it was last year. It's a little bit down from 2019. He's hitting a few more line drives, but the strikeout rate is actually up a decent bit for Kevin Biggio. So we can move on from that group of hitter, but I just kind of all think that they're like in a similar spot where those fly balls are just not flying out. It's not really the case for Josh Bell because he's just hitting so many ground balls. He went 0 for 4 with two more strikeouts on Tuesday. He's batting 134. And I wanted to say, like, there's some optimism for his May batted ball data. 25% line drive rate. That sounds good. Ground ball rate down to 44%. All right, we could work with that. And then a 20% infield fly ball rate. So, what do we do with Bell at this point? I think in deeper, I have him in a 15-team league. I'm not going to drop him there because you have a corner infield spot there as well. But like in a 12-team points league,
That you can't hold on to him anymore. I mean, he's just unstartable. The Ryan Zimmerman is stealing so many starts on top of all the struggles. I have a theory that he got messed up this spring from having to, you know, because he was on such a roll this spring. I have a theory that his swing got messed up when he had to sit all that time at the start of the season and just. Like his swing, as we saw during his amazing 2019 season, it can be so finicky.
Yep.
That he's just had a hard time regaining it, and being in and out of the lineup so much probably hasn't helped with that. So I haven't ruled out the possibility Josh Bell comes roaring back, but like roster space is too precious for you to devote a spot to him indefinitely.
Would you drop Josh Bell for... I would have said Brandon Belt, but he left with an injury today. We talked about him yesterday. He's got some interesting Statcast numbers. Man, there's not really a great group of first base eligible players available. How about Jamer Candelario? Would you make that move?
Probably not, unless like I had to have somebody starting right now.
I'm looking at players rostered in under 60% of leagues. Miguel Sano, no. I mean, how about Ryan Mountcastle? He's been playing better, but strikes out a ton as well.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of faith in Mountcastle. I'd stick with Bell if that was the case, if that was the only alternative.
Yeah, all the interesting first basemen, they already got scooped up. Like Jesus Aguilar is 83% rostered, Nate Lowe, 89%. Yuli Gurriel is off to a great start, but he's 95% rostered as well. So
it might just have to be an exception out there in a shallower league.
Yeah.
Which...
Maybe just make a trade for a first baseman if you have Josh Bell and just kind of stash him on the bench right now. Though again, in those shallower leagues, 12 team points, 10 team anything, I think you could drop Josh Bell for now. Jorge Soler. I was getting ready to rip this guy a new one, and then he goes out and has a great game on Tuesday. He went 2 for 5 with his third home run, put up 6 RBI. The problem is he's batting only 200 and. He's been really inconsistent throughout his career, Scott. He had that monster 2019 season with the juice ball, but he's been just kind of meh since then. Worryometer, Jorge Soler.
Maybe, I don't know, 5, 6. He's probably going to get hot at some point and hit a ton of home runs because he hits the ball as hard as almost anybody. I mean, he's right there behind like the Stanton Judge class of hitters in terms of how hard they impact the ball, probably right there, like with Miguel Sano and Joey Gallo. Early in the season, the strikeout rate was resembling more of a Miguel Sano, so you could understand why he was struggling. But it's down below 30% now. And he's in the 99th percentile for hard hit rate. He's in the 98th percentile for average exit velocity. So he's going to start hitting some balls over the fence here, I think. Soler will.
Another one, 6.5% home run to fly ball ratio. This is, last year it was 23%. In 2019, it was 28%. So even someone who impacts the ball as hard as Jorge Soler has been affected by, you know, this ongoing problem that we see in baseball. So, and this is someone who hits the ball extremely hard, as you pointed out, Scott. So would you drop him anywhere? Would you drop him in a points league? He strikes out so much.
Points league, the standard for a must roster hitter is awfully high, and Soler doesn't meet it.
Okay, but in any type of 5 outfielder, roto, you would hold on to him?
Yeah, yeah. Five outfielder rotor, sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Gleyber Torres in this same discussion here. Chris put out an article on Tuesday and had Gleyber Torres as a sell low. Get something for Gleyber Torres while you can. And since the start of last season, Gleyber Torres is batting .242 with a .687 OPS, four home runs in 74 games. The plate discipline is actually strong, 13% walk rate, 17% strikeout rate. Of 186 hitters with at least 250 plate appearances over the last two seasons, Gleyber Torres' 24% hard contact rate is the ninth lowest in baseball, ninth lowest of 186 batters. So what's your worryometer, Scott, on Gleyber? He's kind of shown signs recently of breaking out of it, but he has one home run on the season. It's May 12th.
Yeah, so probably like a 6 or 7 on Gleyber Torres compared to that 5 for Eddie Rosario. You know, yeah, I don't know. I mean, his career started so effortlessly. You know, there was the 38 homer season and sophomore season, but he looked good as a rookie too. He looked like an early to mid round type player as a rookie, like a potential 30 homer guy then. So it's weird the way he's dropped off. Obviously you give him a pass for the 2020 season, but now this, and he's squarely in that group of hitters that I just have no idea how to evaluate anymore. I need to see more info. I probably won't know how to evaluate them all season, frankly. After the season, can get a sense of who recovered to put up worthwhile stats and who didn't. But right now, I'm just totally lost with these guys. I would put like Anthony Rizzo in that category, Paul Goldschmidt. So many hitters. Don't know what to make of them.
The last thing I will bring up about Gleyber Torres is that I mentioned the plate discipline. Past 2 years, it's been up. He's got a 13% walk rate. I think he's actually being a little bit too patient and he's being too selective. I think he's got to go back to chasing pitches a little bit more, which is something we don't normally say. But back in 2019, when he hit those 38 home runs, he had a 35% chase rate. Since then, it's been 25%. So just be the player that you are, right? Like, don't try to be something that you're not. And that was something that stood out to me for Gleyber Torres as well. So if we see that kind of ticking up a little bit, maybe it'll lead to him being a better player. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to do buy, sell, or hold for some starting pitchers who pitch on Tuesday. We'll do that next here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from the people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Let's talk about the pitcher who opposed Shohei Ohtani on Tuesday, and Lance McCullers was absolutely fantastic. 8 innings, 1 run, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts, ERA down to 3.10. He had 13 swinging strikes on 96 pitches and continues to use this changeup a little bit more this year. I mean, normally it's been the curveball, Scott, that McCullers would get all this, do all his damage with. It's like, has a legit 4-pitch repertoire, sinker, slider, changeup, curveball. I kind of feel like this is the best version of McCullers that we have seen. So if you
have
the option.
And it hasn't even been going on all year. It's just been the last few starts, basically. And he did it with the stated goal of he felt like he was leaving some innings on the table by not having a diverse enough arsenal. And sure enough, four straight quality starts, four of six plus. There was a seven-inning start in there. There was, of course, this eight-inning start. And I think he's better off for it. Still has an incredible ground ball rate. Still getting swinging strikes at a rate that's typical for him. The XFIP's a little high, but the walk rate's been kind of high. So, yeah, overall he's looking good. And actually, the XFIP, I'm sorry, updated with this after this most recent start. The XFIP is back in line with what we're used to seeing from him, too.
Nice. Would you buy, sell, or hold all McCullers? Where's your confidence in him?
I don't think it's a bad idea to try shopping him just because there's a surplus of pitchers in this range and he's coming off his best start of the season and he has an injury history. He's never thrown even 130 innings in a season. So not a bad idea to shop him, but if you don't find a great return, then nothing wrong with holding on to him either.
How about Robbie Ray, who was at the Braves on Tuesday? Six innings, three runs, one walk, 10 strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes on 99 pitches. Now, the Braves do swing and miss quite a bit. I believe they're 10th in baseball in swinging strike rate, but this was still a pretty impressive performance. 33 strikeouts to just one walk over Robbie Ray's last four starts, Scott. So if you had the option, buy, sell, or hold, where are you at on Robbie Ray?
I guess hold. I don't know what the case would be to buy, but I guess if somebody was offering him for dirt cheap. But no, I'm pretty excited about what he's done here. The walk he issued in this game was his first in his past in four starts. One walk and four starts for Robbie Ray. He's throwing harder than he ever has before, and he's walking fewer guys than he ever has before. And for a while, it was like, where are the strikeouts? But suddenly, three out of four starts, I believe it is, with nine plus. So, yeah, this might be the best Robbie Ray ever. And that's saying something when you go back and look at his 2017 season.
Yeah, because he's walking so few, it's allowing him to pitch deeper into games, too, and because of that efficiency. So, you know, normally, when he was in his prime, yeah, he'd give you all these strikeouts. He'd give you, whatever, 10 strikeouts, double-digit strikeout games. But a lot of times, it would be five, maybe he would get to six innings. I agree. This might be the best version of Robbie Ray that we have seen. So I am pretty excited about him. I'd be willing to hold or potentially even buy if someone's not buying into him mm-hmm. the way that we are, right? So kind of a buy high situation there for Robbie Ray. How about Jordan Montgomery at the Tampa Bay Rays? Six innings, one run, one walk, nine strikeouts, 17 swinging strikes on 85 pitches. Of course, Tampa Bay has one of the highest swinging strike rates in baseball. The ERA is down to 3.96. Buy, sell, or hold?
I would probably sell. I mean, this was clearly his best start of the season. He does have a second matchup this week. I believe it's against the Orioles, another favorable one. So obviously you want to take advantage of that. But he's pretty meh. He's not going to be a big bat misser generally. He's not going to pitch six with enough consistency. This is only his third quality start this year. So yeah, not super excited about Montgomery over the long run.
If you could turn Montgomery into someone like Moustakas or Lourdes Gurriel, would you do it? Yep. I'm going to try to compare pitcher for hitter trades more moving forward because it seems like because everyone has such a surplus for pitchers, I don't know that a lot of pitcher for pitcher trades are happening or are even necessary at this point. I'll try and find some hitters that we can compare these pitchers to when we're talking trades. How about Matthew Boyd, Scott? You gotta give the guy some credit. At some point, Scott, you gotta do it. His first start back against the Kansas City Royals, six shutout, four hits, two walks, five strikeouts, 12 swinging strikes on 92 pitches for Matthew Boyd. He threw four different pitches at least 11 times in the start. The changeup usage remains up, and it's really helped all of his other pitches so far this season. You know, in the past, he would throw a blast fastball, 91, 92, and he would throw his slider a ton, like 30% plus of the time, and it just wasn't a great formula. Now he's mixing in the curve, the change a little bit more. I really like what I've seen from Matthew Boyd, Scott. There will be some regression. You know, he's not going to pitch to a 2 ERA or whatever, but I think he's serviceable. Buy, sell, or hold?
Sell. No, I still think...
You hate Matthew Boyd!
I still think there's a lot of disaster waiting to happen potentially because he remains an extreme fly ball pitcher, ninth highest fly ball rate among pitchers this year, and yet he's allowed one home run, a single home run. Like, you can't tell me that's not good home run luck. It's still a good era for home runs. It's not the past 2 years, granted, but it's still a good time for it's still a prolific time for home runs. And Boyd's allowed one, even with that high fly ball rate. So you can understand then why his xFIP is 491. 491. So that's interesting, because his FIP is 296. But FIP, what xFIP does that FIP doesn't, xFIP measures fly ball rate. FIP measures home run rate. So right. FIP is just saying, oh, clearly he's good at preventing home runs. Yeah. I don't think that's true. I think the xFIP is what you need to look at, and it's 491.
But what I will add to that, Scott, is with that home run to fly ball ratio down across the middle class hitters throughout baseball that we've talked about, maybe he can suppress home runs this season, right? Like, with this ball that they're using, maybe this is the year that, you know, okay, like, I'm not saying draft him next year, but maybe he could just somehow manage to outpitch his xFIP because home run per fly ball rate is down for most hitters, right? So I agree with you.
Maybe he can be better than, I mean, last two, he was ridiculously bad. 19.7% home run to fly ball rate last year, 18.2 the year before. But go back to 2018, the year that's very much like this year in terms of home run rate. It was 11.2, the home run to fly ball rate. Certainly better than 18 or 19%, 11.2. Yeah. But right now, his for this season is below 2%, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of correction coming there with the home runs, no matter how you slice it.
Marcus Stroman up against the Baltimore Orioles, 6 1/3, 1 run, 5 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 90 pitches. The ERA down to 1.99. 3.24 xFIP on the year. He's got a 56% ground ball rate. That is fifth among qualified starting pitchers. And the best control that we've ever seen from Marcus Stroman, Scott. So buy, sell, or hold on him?
I think I'd hold. I mean, this is the best xFIP of his career. The fact that he has the lowest walk rate of his career, I guess that makes sense. But, of course, the main thing that Stroman has always been good at is keeping the ball on the ground. That hasn't changed this year. If he continues with this kind of control, he's shaping up to be a career year for a guy who's, you know, already a pretty good pitcher. If you have a pitching surplus, Stroman is probably one I would look to shop, just to be clear.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to be plenty startable all season long.
Last one I wanted to talk about, Chris Bassitt, another one where, like, we want to keep doubting him, but he just keeps showing up and proving us wrong. This time at the Boston Red Sox, 7 innings, 2 runs, 0 walks, 10 strikeouts, and the ERA is down to 3.54. He's allowed exactly 2 earned runs in each of his last 6 starts, 46 strikeouts to 37 innings pitched during that span. Scott, buy, sell, or hold Chris Bassitt?
Yeah, the whiff rate has gone way up. This start with the 10 strikeouts, he only had 12 whiffs in getting those 10 strikeouts, but it was at Boston, and it was his fifth straight start with double-digit swinging strikes when that wasn't something he did very often last year, even when he was having success, those double-digit swinging strike starts. So, a lot of S sounds. Sally sells seashells by the seashore. Yeah, I'm pretty on board with Bassitt at this point. 338 xFIP, that was well over 4 last year with the success he was having then. There's that word again. And pretty much on board.
Who would you rather, if you have both on your team and you're looking to sell one of them, who would you rather sell, Stroman or Chris Bassitt?
I think I would prefer to trade Stroman, which is kind of a gamble because he's more of a known quantity. But yeah, I think I'd rather shoot for the lower whip with Bassitt.
Let's take a look at some waiver wire starting pitchers and talk about Yusei Kikuchi. Catch you up on this start. Still going on in the West Coast. Yusei Kikuchi finishes 6 1/3, 6 hits, 3 runs, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Kikuchi is 57% rostered. I'm going to lump these 4 names together, Scott.
Way up.
You let me know which one you like most. JT Brubaker against the Reds, 6 innings, 1 run, 4 strikeouts, has been awesome this year. He's 70% rostered. Logan Webb against the Texas Rangers, 10 strikeouts over 6 innings. Albert Alzolay at Cleveland, 6 innings, 3 runs, 6 strikeouts, 0 walks. So between Brubaker, Kikuchi, Alzolay, and Webb, rank them.
Kikuchi, Alzolay, Brubaker, Webb. This was kind of the first start for Webb where we saw that mythical changeup from this spring that got compared to Luis Castillo's changeup. Yeah, that's a joke in and of itself, right?
You don't want that.
So that was, you know, I was encouraged to see it from Webb, but got to see more of it. Alzolay continues to pile up whiffs with that slider. That's now his most used pitch. Brubaker keeps getting ground balls. He is, I think he has the fourth best ground ball rate. Yeah, fourth best ground ball rate. So that's obviously explains his success. Ooh, I said it right. And Yusei Kikuchi. That brings us to Yusei Kikuchi, whose last three starts have all been amazing. They've been his best three swinging strike starts of the season. His velocity, he gained about a mile per hour on the fastball, maybe a little less than that, over that three-start stretch. And we've seen the effectiveness take off. So yeah, Kikuchi may be turning a corner here.
And Kikuchi has kind of gone down this Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove route of using his curveball, his cutter rather, as his main pitch. He threw it 54 times against the Dodgers on Tuesday. That accounted for 51% of his pitches. He had 17 swinging strikes on 106. 8 of those came on his cutter. So he's using that basically as his main pitch. And as you mentioned, the four-seam velocity up there. So lots to like about Yusei Kikuchi right now. Scott, would you drop Dinelson Lamet for any, all of these pitchers?
Oh, that two-inning pitcher, Dinelson Lamet.
His velocity was way down again. It was, I think it was 3 miles per hour down on his fastball, 2 miles per hour down on the slider.
Gosh. I don't think I'd drop him for, well, I wouldn't drop him for Webb, and I wouldn't drop him for Brubaker, I don't think. But if would I drop him for Alzolay?
Alzolay is kind of healthy Dinelson Lamet right now. Not as good, but...
Well, yeah, that's exaggerating it, but...
Just two pitches, and I see similarities.
I don't think I could drop Lamet yet for Alzolay, but we're getting close to that point. He's got to show us something. But Kikuchi, yeah, if that was the only way I could get Kikuchi on the roster, I think I'd do it.
All right. I wanted to talk a little bit about Jesse Winker, Scott. Should our confidence be growing? I brought him up maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, and... You were like, you know, he's done this before and he's dealt with so many injuries. So I want to check back in and see if your confidence is actually has actually grown for him. He went 3-for-4 with his 7th home run on Tuesday. He's batting .374 and StatCast page is filled with red. He's absolutely crushing the ball. Launch angle is up. There were, you know, for a couple of years, Winker would hit too many ground balls. He wouldn't put the ball in the air enough. He's up to a career-high 14.5 degree average launch angle. I kind of feel like at a position where everyone stinks, right, Scott, in outfield? Like, Winker, should we get him inside our top 25? Close to, like, that Jared Walsh range, basically?
Probably. So the other side of the coin from what I was saying about not having confidence in my ability to assess any mid-class hitter who's struggling in this new environment, that any mid-class hitter who's performing well, I feel like there's no choice but to buy into him. It's much easier in Winker's case, and of course the year I preach caution on him is the year he's probably going to break through, because in addition, you mentioned the launch angle, but bringing it down more specifically, he has a line drive rate over 30% right now, which if you have a line drive rate over 25%, it's going to be hard for you not to hit for average, you know. If it's over 30, like, probably going to compete for batting title, I would say. And the fact that his lineup spot seems to be more secure than ever, which I guess how could it not be with him hitting so well? I can't imagine being so confident in the rest of my lineup at this point, the rest of my fantasy lineup, that I'm going to sell high on Winker. I just can't imagine. I can't imagine being the guy in that position. So, yeah, buying a Winker. How can you not?
Yeah, he's an injury risk. He's a very different player than Byron Buxton. I get, like, you know, they don't have similar skill sets, but it's kind of a similar situation where now that he's breaking out, I kind of feel like you should just reap the rewards. Like, you shouldn't just try to sell high, because if Winker stays healthy, he's one of these guys where I could see him hit well over 300, 30 plus homers in a great ballpark, leading off for an okay lineup, a decent lineup there with Cincinnati. His 30.4% line drive rate is fourth best among qualified hitters so far this year. So our confidence growing with Jesse Winker. Scott, I mentioned I might have an outfielder to buy on, and I don't really know where his valuation at is right now, so maybe we figure this out together, but Teoscar Hernandez. He is batting .326 with two homers and one steal with just a 15% strikeout rate in 11 games since returning from the IL. Now, we didn't like Teoscar Hernandez basically across the board on this podcast coming into the year. But If a player makes adjustments in season and you can get them at a cheaper cost than what they were before the season started, during draft season when he was a top 100 pick, then I think there's an opportunity to buy. And I like what I've seen from Teoscar since he's returned from the IL. So what do you think?
I mean, yeah, if he can get that strikeout rate down, I'm very suspicious of that. I mean, the cumulative strikeout rate for him, as good as it's been in those 11 games, is still like right at 30, basically, which is where it's always been, where it was last year. So, yeah, I'm not ready to say anything's changed for him. I could see buying low on him just because you want another potential impact bat at a position that's been difficult to fill, and just hoping for the best. But that's all I'd be doing if I was buying on Hernandez right now.
Would you trade Jordan Montgomery or Matthew Boyd, who you had as sell candidates, for Teoscar Hernandez?
Yeah. I would trade either of them for Hernandez.
Do you think that's a realistic trade? Do you think that's something that can happen?
Yeah. I do. I mean, you should probably aim higher with Boyd right now, as good as his numbers look.
Mm-hmm. So you think you can get maybe like a Charlie Blackmon for Matthew Boyd? Or is that too high?
No, I don't think it's too high at all.
Okay.
I think you should aim high with Boyd. Aim as high as you're willing to to accept rejection on, accept mockery for, and then dial back from there. Yeah, Montgomery, I'd be surprised if you could really get anything of value for him, but it's worth a try probably for like the Hernandez range on down.
I've got some waiver wire hitters I wanted to mention. Nick Senzel. I'm going to just keep talking about him until his roster rate is, you know, over 70 or 80%. He had three more hits on Tuesday. He now has 14 hits over his last nine games. He has two steals on the season with five caught stealing. So at some point, they're probably going to tell him to stop running. He is 96th percentile in sprint speed, but has not been fortunate on the base paths. He is 64% rostered. Adam Frazier had two more hits, including his first homer of the season. He is batting .312, 59% rostered. Jorge Polanco coming on strong now. Seven hits over his last three games, including two homers. He is 63% rostered. Scott, specifically with those last two that have middle infield eligibility, would you drop Kevin Biggio for either, both Frazier or Jorge Polanco?
No, I wouldn't do it for either. But I'm disgusted because you have no idea. All my like 15 team roto leagues have been starting Jorge Polanco all season. I finally bench him this week. What happens? He starts to come around, and I think it's going to keep getting. It's been a while since I've looked at Jorge Polanco's underlying numbers, but last I looked, the line drive rate was still great. The strikeout rate was still great. Eh, strikeout rate's a little high for him, but it's not a bad strikeout rate. Line drive rate's a little low for him. Okay. So, yeah, harder to say he's going to bounce back given those numbers, but he at least appears to be trending that direction.
Some deeper league hitters. Cesar Hernandez has 9 hits, including 2 homers over his last 8 games. Robbie Grossman went 2-for-5 with a triple and 5 RBI. He is 20% rostered on CBS. Taylor Ward, Scott, you mentioned his name last week. He went 2-for-3 with his second home run of the season.
I saw you took him from me in the Dynasty League in the 24-teamer. I had my bid lined up probably before I mentioned him to you on this podcast, and then you went and...
I did not put a bid in for him until after the podcast ended.
Yeah,
Scott,
and it was a $3 bid, right?
Yep.
Mine was 2, so.
Ha! Take that!
Yeah.
Taylor Ward, and then Troy Stokes, which I didn't know who this gentleman was until a couple of days ago when he got called up for the Pirates, but good for him. He finally made it to the big leagues. He went 2-for-3 with a double, 2 RBI, a walk, and his first career steal. He has 3 seasons with 20-plus steals in the minors. Scott, anything you'd like to add about Cesar Hernandez, who actually has pretty good underlying numbers, according to StatCast, Robbie Grossman, Taylor Ward, and Troy Stokes Jr.?
Yeah, I could see Hernandez becoming a pretty valuable piece if he gets his batting average back up where it normally is, and you say the underlying numbers are good. So there's a decent chance of that. If it's not going to be as easy for so many middle infielders to hit 20-plus home runs in this environment, which, I mean, like I've said a few times, go back and look at 2018. Still plenty of them did then. But it would make a non-home run hitter like Hernandez, who excels in other ways, it would make him more valuable.
Some Thursday leftovers. Manny Machado went 2-for-5 with a home run, a triple, and 5 RBI. He has been scuffling recently, but another one where the StatCast numbers say that he's been a little bit unlucky. So anyone out there in your league concerned about Manny Machado, go out and get him. John Means followed up his no-hitter at the Mets. 6 shutout, 6 hits, 0 walks, 3 strikeouts. They only let him throw 74 pitches in this one. I think that was probably planned after he threw so many in the no-hitter.
John Means leisure. Only throwing 74 pitches.
Marcus Semien now has 16 hits during a 10-game hitting streak. The batting average is up to .267. Kenta Maeda and Dylan Cease were both meh. They allowed 3 earned runs each over 5 innings pitched. Mitch Haniger had a double dong. Anything you would like to say about any of the players I just mentioned, Scott?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there is a lot I'd like to say, Frank. Breezing by these guys. Okay, so I made reference to Eovaldi earlier. He only had 6 swinging strikes in this start, as good as it was, and that's actually 3 straight now where the swinging strikes have been bad. To combine 20 strikes... Combined 20 swinging strikes in Eovaldi's last 3 starts after doing so well with that number early in the season, and barely thrown any sliders now. The case for him early on was, oh, look, he does not just 1 breaking ball, but 2. This is something we've never seen before. Look at how he plays them off each other and gets all these missed bats, and that's not happening for Eovaldi anymore. So I don't know. Losing faith in him. Meanwhile, Dylan Cease looks like, you know, not such a great start. 3 earned runs in 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, whatever. 20 swinging strikes in those 5 innings. 20 swinging strikes. What if it had been if he'd made it 7 and be like a Jacob deGrom number? 10 of those 20 swinging strikes came on his fastball, which is not a pitch that you normally see get a lot of swinging strikes. The spin rate, which I'd been talking about with Cease's past couple outings, was still amazing, like a league-leading type spin rate on that fastball, which explains all the swinging strikes. The spin rate was still amazing on the slider like it was last time. I think this guy's very much on the right track, and I would not give a thought to dropping him. I'd probably be looking to buy him at this point, especially after this start, because this may be one of the last starts for Dylan Cease that's this ordinary. And then I want to talk about Kenta Maeda too, because I did see one good sign for Kenta Maeda amid the not-so-great start. You know, only 3 strikeouts in 5 innings, only 10 swinging strikes. Neither of those numbers is very good. But I did notice that 6 of his 10 swinging strikes came on his splitter. 6 out of the 14 splitters hitters swung at, they swung and missed. That's a 43% whiff rate, which is different from a swinging strike rate because it's number of misses on number of swings versus number of misses on number of pitches. So yeah, 43% whiff rate on the splitter in this start, which is about what the whiff rate was on a splitter last year. And remember, that's the pitch that the results seemed to change the most on. His whiff rate on his splitter was way down. So the whiff rate on a splitter was back to 2020 standards, at least for this one start. The overall line wasn't great, but you know, I take that as a positive sign for Kenta Maeda.
Alrighty. The call to the pen. We'll get some bullpen updates here. Jake McGee got his 10th save of the season. He now has three straight scoreless appearances. For the Oakland A's, Jake Diekman came in for his fourth save, and he was facing a lefty, a righty, and then he actually had to face five batters, so it was another lefty after that. But it continues to look like musical chairs here for the Oakland A's in the ninth inning. For Cleveland, Emmanuel Class A got his seventh save. James Karinchak recorded a four-out hold. For the Orioles, Cesar Valdez allowed two runs. He took his third blown save and the loss. For Toronto, Jordan Romano, baby. This is why we drafted you. 29,
finally got it.
29 pitches, but he did record his first save of the season. It was pretty stressful. A hit allowed, a walk allowed. He's 49% rostered, so if you need him in a categories league, you need saves, definitely look, go out there and get Jordan Romano. And then for the Tigers, it wasn't a save opportunity. They were up four runs in the ninth, but Jose Cisnero came in. He allowed four runs. The game was tied, and then they eventually brought in Gregory Soto to put out the fire. But I was surprised that they didn't bring in Gregory Soto a little bit earlier in that game. I was just watching the Dodgers and Mariners, and man, Rafael Montero, this guy's cooked. He is done. An inning and a third, two hits, three runs, came in a one-run game, completely blew it, gave up a three-run homer to Gavin Lux. Are you sure, Frank? I wouldn't be surprised if this guy is like DFA'd tomorrow.
Because I thought it happened after the third blown save. I was pretty sure after the fourth blown save.
After the fifth blown save,
I'm kind of going the other direction now and thinking he's just untouchable.
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. I think it's one of those like kind of weird baseball political things where they traded for him in the offseason, so they kind of feel like they need to justify the trade by continuing to throw him out there, but he's bad. He's got a 5.51 ERA. He's blown five saves. Kenley Jansen on the other side, by the way, he struck out two. He has six saves. He has a 1.76 ERA. So everything looks great for Kenley Jansen. To stream or not to stream for Wednesday, Scott, choose three of these. Matt Harvey at the Mets. Oh, I remember this group. It's pretty bad. Zach Davies at Cleveland. Casey Mize versus the Royals. John Gant at the Brewers. Andrew Heaney at the Astros. And Jay Happ at the White Sox.
Yeah, so Heaney's the only one I'd consider for the strikeout rate. And if I'm looking to preserve ERA and whip, not going to do it. I really don't want to pick any others. Chris, if he was here, would say John Gant is pretty good.
John Gant has like a 3.24 ERA for his career.
Yeah.
That's my Chris Sowers impression.
I'm not willing to go there, but just to represent the Chris wing, I will throw John Gant's name out there.
I'm looking to see if there are any pitchers available that they recently added to the probables for Wednesday. James Kaprielian is pitching for the Oakland A's. That's interesting. Not that you would start him, but he's a former prospect. I believe he's had two Tommy John surgeries, but pay attention to the name, James Kaprielian. Anyone else? Nope. Justin Dunn at the Dodgers. Don't want to do that either. To stream or not to stream for Thursday, Daniel Lynch at the Tigers, Spencer Turnbull versus the Royals, Merrill Kelly versus the Marlins, Garrett Richards versus the A's, Wade Miley at the Rockies, and Mike Foltynewicz at the Astros.
Oh, gosh.
You got another all-star lineup, Scott.
That's not much better. Garrett Richards, he's looked better. Made some changes to his delivery. Two of his last three starts, anyway, he's looked impressive. Tough matchup against Oakland, but he'd probably be my first choice if you're making me pick one of these. And you are. Wade Miley at Colorado might be my second choice. Which tells you everything you need to know. I don't want to pick a third. Turnbull against the Royals. That's my third.
Let's wrap up with a few email/Apple Podcast review questions that we received. And this is an APR from Alberto Macias. Grade the trade. Head-to-head categories OBP. Traded away Aaron Judge and Emmanuel Class A for Bryce Harper and Zach Gallen. Seems pretty good.
Yeah, it does. I would give that trade
A.
A-minus.
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 This is an Apple Podcast review from Amy Moak, 92. 12-team head-to-head points to create space for Alex Kirilloff on my IL. I traded Steven Strasburg for Trent Grisham. What do you think, Scott? Grade the trade?
I give that trade head-to-head points league. I still give it a favorable grade. I'll give it a B.
Trent Grisham is so awesome, by the way. I mean, the guy has just been, he's been great this year. This happens every year, Scott, with at least one player that gets a little bit banged up in spring training, and I get scared off. I get spooked away, and then I just wind up with no shares. But I liked Grisham, and I didn't get him anywhere, so that stinks. Grade the trade from Maxwell. Traded Jesse Winka and Alex Reyes for Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously have to do it. What kind of grade would I give it? Lower than you might think. B plus.
I was thinking B minus. I was wrestling with a C plus, Scott. I mean, it's still Lindor.
You love you some Winker, huh?
I like Winker quite a bit. Alex Reyes looks like an elite closer too. So, I would still take.
Walks.
I would have taken the trade. I would have took the trade myself. Grade the trade from Andrew. I traded Matt Manning and Shane McClanahan for Charlie Morton in a keeper league where you keep 14. It's a quality starts league.
Not sure how many teams are in the league. I assume like 12. So yeah, Manning and McClanahan, they would not be automatic keepers at all. So I like it. Yeah.
Charlie Morton keeps talking about retiring. So I don't know that you'll have him beyond this year, but.
Right. I'm just thinking it might be tough to make Manning or McClanahan part of your 14 keepers unless you're just a true rebuilding team. So I don't think you lose much long-term here by shooting your shot with Morton, who, by the way, his home run to fly ball rate, you're saying, Frank, that all these hitters, you know, their fly balls aren't turning into home runs as easily. Morton's home run to fly ball rate is about twice what it normally is, about two times as high as what it's been the past 2 years. So, you know, I was saying Matthew Boyd's due for worse home run luck. Morton's due for much, much better home run luck.
Grade the trade here. This last one's from Gonzo. I'm in a 8x8 league standard, but with OPS on hitting and K per nine with saves plus holds on pitching. Just dealt Waskari Noah for Ryan McMahon, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. Loving McMahon's advanced stats, 230 ISO and above average ex-WOBA, and he's making real hard contact. Yeah, I dove back into Ryan McMahon on Tuesday, and I love what I saw, man. Like, he's doing everything that he should to break out, so.
Yeah, no, this is a great deal.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton of confidence in Inoa sustaining this to begin with, but even if I did, I think just given the relative scarcity of dependable bats and McMahon being a triple eligible one on top of it. Yeah, I like the deal.
All righty, we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.